Thank you, Fran. My name's Claire. I'm a compulsive overeater, bulimic restrictor, orthorexic, amongst many other qualifications that I could put in, which probably aren't relevant in this particular meeting. Cross addiction is one of my things. Just like to say, to begin with, I'm incredibly fearful today, uncharacteristically, totally unprepared for this. And I did that on purpose. My two-way prayer this morning says, I've never done a main share without preparation and planning. And what I got back from my higher power was preparation and planning, Claire, is control and lack of trust. So does this mean I've now accepted what the set-aside prayer means? So this is a new experience for me. So if it's really, really messy, my apologies. I'll do my best to try and bring my experience, strength, and hope together in some kind of sensible order. Okay. See, now I don't know where to start. What it was like. Let's start with what it was like. Was not one of those people who developed an eating disorder because of any body image problems, any childhood. Well, Annie, I thought it was no childhood trauma, but then I turned out later that actually there was some childhood trauma that I needed to work through. I found bulimia as a result of a sexual assault at the age of 13, and I randomly vomited up what the meal I'd just eaten, and instantly that happened. I felt nothing. I was totally numb. So then I married up the idea of bulimia. I didn't know what it was called at the time, but stuffing my feelings down with food and then purging to get rid of my feelings as well as getting rid of the food was my answer. And it was my answer for many, many, many years. And it worked. It actually worked. On top of that, there were other addictions that I went from one addiction to another, but always the one constant was the food. The food never left. The other ones I cycled through, but the food was always the same. Always. I came into another program at the age of 18, because it was apparent that there were things going a little bit awry in my life and things were unmanageable, and I wasn't in control, and my coping techniques were not working. However, I would not let go of my food addiction. I was in complete and utter denial that this was something that was not working for me in my life. I wouldn't let it go. It was compartmentalized in a little box in my head, and I wasn't going to let you anywhere near it. If you even came and asked me a question about it, I would be so defensive as to be almost aggressive. Until I ended up in a treatment center for other addictions. I'm not going to go through the whole cycle of what happened in the 20 years leading up to being in that treatment center. Actually, no, 25 years of the same shit over and over again, excuse my language, expecting different results and not getting them there because I wasn't in recovery. I was in this treatment center for other addictions, and OA would come in once a month. And I heard one speaker come in because I was like, I don't want to hear you. I don't need this fellowship. Thank you very much. I've already got two other fellowships. I don't need another one. I certainly don't need to work the steps with you guys. And it's not a problem. Leave me alone. Leave me and leave my food right alone. Don't come near it. So defensive. Justification, rationalization, the whole caboodle. It was just like, you don't touch my food. No way. But I heard this one share, and she introduced herself. My name is, and I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic. My ears pricked up. I started to listen. And she went on basically not to tell my story, but to tell enough of my story for me to identify with it. And I was compelled after that, in a room full of 50 addicts, not people with eating disorders, not people with food addiction, just random addicts of all sorts. And I stood up and I said, My name's Claire, and I think I may have a bit of a problem with food. And that was as far as I got. Somebody grassed me up. Somebody broke my anonymity in that meeting and told the counsellors that I'd shared this. They sent me on a Saturday morning to OA. I was a little bit resentful about this to begin with. I don't belong here. I don't need you. I don't want you in my life. But I sat down and I listened, and slowly, 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 I guess when I stood up in that meeting, that was me getting my step one in my head. I had it in my head. I knew there was something that I heard a solution in her share. And as I heard that solution, I thought, maybe this could work for me. Maybe, just possibly, I might be the same as her. So I went to the OA meetings. I listened. I was trying to hide. I sat as close to the door as I could with my hood up, my head down, hiding from everybody. Didn't want to be there. It was so uncomfortable. It pressed all my trigger warning buttons. It's just like, please don't come anywhere near me. Please don't take this away from me. I still thought it was working. I still thought this was a useful coping tool that was working in my life. It wasn't. It really wasn't. So at that point, I was in that meeting and I was speaking to another fellow who was also forced into the taxi and sent to OA every Saturday morning. And I heard her denial and her justification and her rationalization. And I called her out on it. I called her out. I called her out on her bullshit. And then as I was saying that to you, something in my head, I'm guessing it's a higher power thing, said to me, Claire, that's what you say to yourself. That is exactly what you say to yourself, that it's not a problem. It's not as bad as everybody thinks it is. And you don't need this program. You do not need this program. And I heard that voice and I was like, oh. And at that point, my step one went from in my head straight into my heart. And when I came to believe it in my heart, I'm kind of quoting the 12 and 12 here. That's when I finally got my step one and I was ready to move forward in this program. I would love to say that I was struck abstinent on that day. I certainly was not. But I had my step one. I didn't know what to do with my step one. And to be honest, I felt even more hopeless once I'd accepted my step one, because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to move forward. Moving on another year, having left that treatment centre, and my doctor saying to me over and over again, Claire, you're going into hospital because you're about to have a heart attack and die. You've done that much damage to your heart. Your electrolytes are going to kill you. You're going to go to sleep tonight. And I make all the excuses, all the denial. I don't feel unwell. She said, well, you're not going to feel unwell. You'll just have a heart attack and die. That's how bad it got. It was my doctor forcing me into hospital like at least once a week for months and months and months on end, and I'm still denying it. I'm sat in the hospital. I'm binging and purging in the hospital while I've got a drip in my arm, trying to repair the damage that I've done from binging and purging. Was kind of a wake-up call. This is really out of control. This is really totally and utterly uncontrollable. At that point, I went back to OA of my own volition. And I found myself, then that's the point where I found Footsteps. And I found myself a sponsor. And I started working the steps. Step two was not difficult for me at that point, because it was apparent that by all stretch of the imagination, I had no idea how I'd survived everything that I'd put my body and my mind through over the previous 30 years. I had no idea how I'd survived it all. And the only thing I could think is maybe there is something. I don't know what it is. I have no idea. I don't really have a very good understanding of what my higher power is. I just know that I have a higher power. And I know that, and I totally and utterly trust and believe my step two. It was not difficult for me to do. Step three was a little bit harder, because I didn't know what I was handing it over to, because I'm an agnostic and I like being an agnostic. Don't get me wrong. I love being agnostic, because that means to me that I just have, I'm, it gives me the humility to say, I don't know. I don't have any particularly rigid beliefs in anything, but I'm welcome to hear everybody's opinion of what their higher power means to them. And
And
this
then
bit,
it's
thank you, Sarah. This being a spiritual, not a religious program, I'm very, very happy today to say that I'm an open-minded, free thinker, agnostic, and I like being that because I want to hear everybody's opinion on what their higher power is and how that works in their life. And I'm free to create my vision of the higher power, which is obviously in my life, but I don't know what it is. But I can create some kind of vision of it. And that's based on everybody else's experience, strength, and hope of their higher power. Step three, yeah, that was a little bit more difficult. Step four, the first time I did step four, I can't tell you the first time I did step four, I've got a copy of my first step four, and it was as good, it was as good as I could possibly have made it at the time. Truth is always the same. Honesty changes with my awareness. That's a for today quote. And it was truthful, and it was as honest as I could be. But oh my God, it's so many things were missing out of it. So many things, because I wasn't in a place where I was able to look honestly at some of the things in my life. And as I've gone through the steps again and again and again, each time I go through my step four, and each time I work on every step 10 that I do, I find a new level of honesty. And I can only think that this is going to continue as long as I continue to work the program. So my first step four wasn't great. My first step five was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. We had to pick, I was in a treatment center. We had to pick somebody from on one of our local meetings to come in and to listen to it. So I picked this woman, and there was a few things in there, and it was the sexual sex inventory that I really struggled with, because there's a lot of stuff in there, believe me. And I shared it as honestly as I could do, and I heard she just sat there and she had a smile on her face, and I'm like, why is this funny? This isn't funny to me. And it wasn't that she was laughing, it was that she was identifying. And she said, Claire, me too. And then she gave me a very brief example of something that was not exactly the same circumstance, but very similar. And the lack of judgment and the acceptance and love and kindness that I found in that first step five really gave me so much more confidence to move forward in the steps, and to learn how to trust people, because I had a real big problem with trust. To some degree, I still do, because as I've gone through the steps, and I've learned how to be more open and honest and vulnerable, my level of trust has gone up. But that also does mean my level of vulnerability goes up, and I am like a fiercely loyal person. So when somebody that I care about gets hurt, I overreact, basically. And then I instantly lose trust. And I can give you trust, but I can take it back really, really quickly. Some of this is due to my neurodiversity. Some of it's due to my previous experience with being betrayed. Still working on it, as you can tell. Six and seven, they were probably the most difficult steps for me, because really didn't know what I was handing over. Well, I knew what I wanted to hand over. I didn't know how to hand it over and what to. And my experience of those is that as much as I was willing to hand over my character defects, they weren't immediately removed, which I was a little bit annoyed at. You know, if I'm giving my willingness to hand over my character defects, why aren't they immediately removed? That's just not fair. I've learned along the way that they weren't immediately removed because I still had something to learn from them. If I'm still being taught a lesson from something, then it ain't going to be removed until I've learned the lesson. So some of my character defects pop up every now and then again. I'm like, okay, what lesson haven't I learned yet? Let's learn it. Go back to school. Every day's a school day. Nine and ten. Well, nine. Start with eight and nine. Yeah, they were uncomfortable, but they were so rewarding. So rewarding. Didn't get the answers I wanted from everybody. Is that five?
5 minutes, yeah.
Thank you, sir. So yeah, I didn't. I mean, obviously, I went into those steps thinking, "Yay, I'm going to be forgiven for everything, and everybody's going to get on well." And that wasn't my experience. Some people didn't want to hear it. Some people in no uncertain terms told me where I could stick it. But the majority of people accepted it with loving kindness, and it was very humbling to hear that. That I've got loads of ongoing amends to make. I've got things on my I will do as soon as I can amends list. 10, 11, and 12. These are the steps I love to talk about, specifically step 12. 10, I'm not great at. I can do better at step 10. I tend to kind of leave it until I'm pushed up with my back against the wall, and I think, oh, maybe I should be in step 10 around this. So that's a practice that I could improve upon. Step 11, I every single morning I wake up and I do a two-way prayer, which is, in a way, that kind of incorporates a little bit of my step 10, because sometimes that does turn out to be like half a step 10, and then I go and share it with my sponsor and work the work it through as a step 10. Or if really bad, I'll resort to 12 stepping a problem. Fantastic worksheet. If anybody hasn't got it, I've got a link to it. Step 12, service. This is where my recovery it's really in my step 12. When I came into this program, I was nothing and nobody. Had no focus. I had no reason to live. I could not see a purpose in life, and I couldn't talk. I couldn't open my mouth and tell you how I felt. I couldn't open my mouth and tell you what was going on in my life. I was ashamed. I was permanently in shame and embarrassment and guilt. And I also wanted to talk about the promises. By the way, every single one of those promises has come true. But through gradually, step by step, putting myself into more service, I found a purpose. And now my key worker, who's not in program, she works for the NHS, and she's suggested to me that it's basically the same kind of work, but working for the medical services here, as a expert by experience, which basically is like mentoring, sponsoring somebody, but not within the 12-step program. There's another purpose in my life that's come to me because I do service work in OA. And now I can speak to people. It's just it what the miracle is that I now kind of I've found a way to have unconditional regard for myself and for other people. I have no idea. Sometimes I look in the mirror and I do not recognize the person that I see. And I don't mean physically, I mean the person that I've become. There is no way in the world that this is any of my doing. This is the program. This is higher power. This is you guys who are God with skin on. I couldn't have done any of this with you. And yesterday I celebrated my 3-year abstinence birthday. And considering the last 18 months and how many losses and how much pain and how difficult life has been, I really didn't think I'd be sat here today saying I'm 3 years. There was so much fear around that. I thought it's not going to happen. I'm not going to be able to do the share because I'll be in relapse. I've been sharing about it a lot. I share about everything. I share the mess as well as the message, and I really think that that's beneficial for people when they hear the mess as well as the message. I know there is a quote that people say, don't share the mess, just share the message. Do not agree with that. I want to hear your mess. I want to hear that life gets lifey, and things get painful, and we struggle through it. And sometimes it is a struggle, and sometimes it's really difficult, and sometimes I don't think I'm going to get there. Sometimes I think I'm just going to fall apart. And I come to a meeting and I find identification with someone, and I find support and I find love. And within that, I get through it. That's the miracle of this program. And then, so I share the mess, and then I share, yeah, but I'm at a meeting. And today I'm
Gentle
abstinent.
reminder.
Thank you, Sarah. And today I have hope. And that is the thing that I never had before I came into recovery. I didn't even believe hope was an actual word. I didn't think it was real. And now I know it is because I have it and I feel it. And I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so much for listening to me. I hope I made some sense.